Thank you for tuning in to the Shenanigans Podcast, the only podcast that could potentially lead to a joint OEK resolution banning me from Palau. Difeg, lol, don't ban me from Palau. So I finally made space in my recording studio by clearing out my wheelchair and all those delightful mobility aids that have kept me functional for the last year, only to forget that this studio is insanely hot inside and the house fan is too big, but it's hot and it's humid already and I'm in a tiny room with electronics running. So in lieu of our usual traffic and sirens in the background, you will be listening this episode to the constant hum of the house fan that is literally 2 feet from my face. Last week's episode featured Ogredeo Dr. Patrick Thalé's speech from the 7th opening session of the 10th OEK. I believe that was held on July 10th, 2018. And as promised, I am going to go over a few points made in his speech. However, it'll be in English. For those who do speak Palauan, you'll notice that I've left out a lot of content. And it's on purpose. There are a lot of really important, useful points that he does make throughout the speech, so I will be bringing those up in future episodes. Shout out to the awesome folks who were expecting a Friday episode, because that's when I had intended to drop this one. But life happens, scheduling mishaps, and every damn time I thought the episode was done and ready, something else came along, and I actually would have to re-record content, so this is it. This is my regular day for working on the podcast. Moving on, let's go ahead and start with this passage from Ogredeo Dr. Patrick Thalé's speech, which deals with fact-checking a couple of major points in Palauan history. Also, so I'll air the passage again in Palauan, and then I will just tell you what it says in English. So here's the Palauan.
Ngani at tablol to gol gira del sum okla. Ak mulo acting president lo asia aluid e birugol e via gal mulmal tel toy al mudur armete marmesi marmrao marang arba blad en di aluid e birugol e via gal mulal toy. Magot ngani at tablol to gol so gal musum okla. En via gango dal ad musum okla abinga. Agot agu lelar klay. Muldura namo potokol time de regal muldur eli luasiar mulu sra constitution ablur belau ang soko sra gagi del truel el knelela imad ati lob dra school gira del sum eklise lengua lengua school mo beot el toy trigel mulu sra constitution 1979 adori 8 e 28 tertir olaba at least en bachelor's degree certir ngariar telol mul juris doctors ngariar telol mul medical doctors ngani ak terul ordain ministers ngani ak claim el masters degree adlobli ngsel got el matgo del del belo na magid ra rexira bulur belo ndia gal sab edel melmol mga dadu lo ase ndi dim laga skuli se agora got el swagal got el sumakli e al blue al boringing merang ak ngire gal nga ka mo sumakli ongeru mungal dur te nomre gal ngaim lo roro lo ase sera 1969 olympic ra blura saibale senator kiota kadang iladar to madren el medal de aquel maral toy kadal mut el sulise de aquel maral toy sera olympic 1969 kadang ila 29 el gold medal abola ben ila 17 mundia kudeng el asingra el olympic adoblarni ningira del sum oklar exirgi sel got lungila isel migration olympic games el team rebelam le got lungila isel amle el chairman organizing committee senator kiotal mlarni rablur belau Nira 54 medal, gold medal. Ongerul betoga gold tringa dori wan. Si agot el successful el Micronesian Games. Dirgerul time el dogot, 1969 ma 2010. Tia nomre gal maigro gay makadam leng ede. Si ra the host tringira 1998 takadam le onge wang. Ngarini arul lang lakar ngakar elira gu ay sertir tial tokol wasi oon diak. Tigal dum tam ul wa isi a ngwa timra yakyol mura 18 el gold medal. Gire del modia gado or ul gire el sele gado eria ora bebi rablu. Kida dim lag da oi, gado ngila bato gol gol medara 1969, ndi ngani egel toko il guk mla mudur egel bebi rablu lo ase. Tamler en siu leru ra gal meusi air gamam el dilu ru gamam ra ariom el meusa gol. So adarong asia oi se, gida kum da suendia. Gire del ere history, mang malamal klabel.
There are two issues that we need to correct. I would like to tell the acting president that incorrect, dishonest, and not truthful statements, even if made by high-ranking, wealthier, powerful people, are still incorrect, dishonest, and not truthful statements. It's been said many times, and it was even said yesterday, that of the people who framed the Constitution of the Republic of Palau, less than 10 of them were educated. Now, we need to correct that statement because it implies that school is easy, or rather, that it's of little necessity. There were 38 people who came together to draft the Constitution of the Republic of Palau in 1979. Of them, 28 of them had at least their bachelor's degrees. Six of them had their Juris Doctorates. Six of them were medical doctors. Two of them were ordained ministers. And five of them had their master's degrees. Now, it was said this past Friday that in 1969, the Micronesian Games in Saipan, Senator Kyota, we won over 100 medals, and that is not true. Now, let me reiterate, that is not true. In the 1969 Micronesian Games, we won 29 gold medals and Pohnpei won 17. So I don't know what Olympic Games we attended, but we do need to fact check and correct our history. Our most successful Micronesian Games, where Palau's team placed highest and the chairman of the organizing committee was Senator Kyota, it was held in Palau. We won 54 gold medals. The next closest team won 31 gold medals. That was our most successful Micronesian Games. There have only been two instances where we placed in first, and that's 1969 and 2010. And in our last Micronesian Games, we placed third. When we hosted it in 1998, we came in fourth. Now, someone jokingly said to me yesterday that, oh no, the reason for the count was because the softball team added 18 more gold medals. And we should probably stop laughing and making jokes about it because it's actually made us a laughingstock to the other islands. Yes, we did win many gold medals in 1969, however, we need to understand that the other islands joke about how it took us 2 years of practicing to compete with teams that required little to no practice at all. And is that what we want to hear? I think not. So we need to leave our history intact, truthful, in its original state.
Seral abodolu sa konstitusyon ra 1979. Hindi mula kalubong ol blang kalilela babira lobang ebololu sa konstitusyon. Iti agida uriol mula ako ersi. Magot te sira April Dori 1975. Englaringa ala adam local dibel e adapt tra constitution luluba tirgel dai hior belau el mora constitution Micronesian constitutional convention englaringa ira saibal el nombre era 1976 tirge gid el nomlu ser segid el lol adapt ngira April Dori 1975 angaringa rungul bail brigol ngir turong Lawrence raklal exebio termetet mai budul yutaga kibons Naringa Fumiorngi, Rubas Fritz, Harwar Mlik, Tosiwa Nakamura, Polygar Pasilius Santos Oligong, Sirok Yota, Sadang Silmai, Chagop Sawaichi, Chan Ong Iraget, Ranald Saguma, Romant Mutul, Targong Pedro, Luke Pagemakmad, Hasida Kabugol, Baules Along, Tadaong Hotel, Guniwa Nakamura, Chanson Toribyong, Joshua Gosiba, Salvador Ongrung, Niratkel Etpisong, Lazarus Izali, Ma Isidoro Rudima. Global gula the ice loss it tirgaida will there see a good McClear April Dori 1975 Ababier Lulba Tirigel Lom Tirigid and Moragan Institutional Convention. Mungiagal Dilba Oigel Clea el Angarexi was saying Igel non negotiable demands are other below Angar al Sil Segid Lutumela Lubalmo.
When we began drafting the Constitution in 1979, people did not arrive with blank paper and just start writing the Constitution. There was work that came before then. So first, on April 30th, 1975, a group came together and adopted a constitution that the Palauan representatives took with them to the Micronesian Constitutional Convention that was in Saipan that concluded in 1976. Now, those who came together to write what was adopted on April 30th, 1975 included Rungulbay Brigul, Nirturong Lawrence, Raklay Eusebio Termetet, ibuduli takage bonsa, humiorangila, rubas fritz, haruor maliga, Yoshio Nakamura, Polycarp Basilius, Santos Oligon, Shiro Kyota, Sadang Silmai, Jacob Sawaichi, John O. Miragev, Ronald Sakuma, Roman Matul, Tyrone Pedro, Luke Bagabakmat, Kashida Kabugol, Paules Saalong, Tadawong Hotel, Kuniwa Nakamura, Johnson Turibion, Joshua Koshiba, Salvador Ongrung, Mirat Kelet Pison, Lazarus Isali, and Isidoro Rudim. It is of the utmost importance that we know that they drafted and prepared on April 30th, 1975, the document that was brought by our representatives to the Constitutional Convention of Micronesia. And it's in that document that was brought by our representatives where you can find what we know historically as the non-negotiable demands of the people of Palau. And on to the third passage, which really is my most favorite part and the part I've been waiting to replay again in Palau.
Ngayon nga nga erablu, magtidulit yang lalitandiya kasi ilmet mong ihalik, tungat yang haolik na arig ang atya mameiso ng atya ng ireabangal. Ameiso ng mga rodo ligire las kotsyo lindiya kabol nga kontrakta, arig at ilmuk, lang mga kadarura bats plant. Kaming kumkult mo kul medu, mekmuto ko ilgire laigang, at ako ang dilmuk, harada mo yung lak tiyang ng bats plant na arig lam lang. Yasi sili lam lang mo unrecord, sindir ka kakontrakta tuwagod. Mahistriya, blaka gilt magkiltrir, malara kan pakta road contract edi mla kalung munso el wise ding dia kalungi la madal olbira gula ngani adribo kal ngar bepmiu mal tal borni at eli em semakli lo sen dia kalo wise ajo mesra la mal tela toko em ngodo du aigal gim do orni lela en mal mol mal dike grei edi me ke grei edi mrael 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 mo klo tial toko.
The community is frustrated, so I'm going to voice that here because there are some who cannot, so I will. Now, my little brother Eric is here and Mason is here in Yerevan. Mason is making noise over the airport because he's not getting the contract for it, and Eric is staying quiet because he's already built his batch plant. Now, are either of you prepared to come forth and speak on this, or are you going to stay quiet as people pass by going, "What's this? It's Eric's batch plant that he was awarded." Which would be despite Chief of Staff Cecilin Aldabel going on the record and saying that a contract hasn't been rewarded. Now, per history, Black Micro Corporation was prepared to get the compact road contract and they didn't, so we know these things can happen, they can fall through. But know that it's not right for you to be legislators in our National Congress with this reigning over you. So perhaps when you get the opportunity, you should fix this. Show us that it's not as it appears, because your constituents are watching and they're discussing. And if you don't, then these little things will result in more little things and more little things until it becomes something far too large. Now, I'm going to go ahead and say that this particular part of Ogredeo Dr. Patrick Delay's speech is one of the single greatest public mic drop moments in Palawan history. And I hope it resonates with you as much as it has with me. And I hope this beautifully crafted Palawan call out emboldens others to speak out for what is right. My goal one day for this podcast is to present a whole news segment that consists entirely of good, wholesome, positive, happy news. But until that day comes, here's what I've got for you. So I followed up on the whole Wyndham Palau debacle and I reached out to Wyndham's corporate office and I received confirmation that yes, this is a legit Wyndham development. So I went ahead and sent in a follow-up inquiry using the questions, concerns, feedback that I'd received from you guys, and I'll be following up on that response once I receive one. And honestly, this was going to be the extent of my news segment today because I really wanted to get like the history of the Trust Territory. However, A few minutes ago, I saw this post on Facebook from Senator Inabu that said, Senator Jocon Baules, President of the Senate, and Delegate Sabino Anastasio, Speaker of the House of Delegates, threatened to cut the fiscal year 2019 budget to Palau Visitors Authority and or budget to our embassy in Taiwan, ROC Taiwan, if Ambassador Dilmay Olgaril continues to support the Republic of China, Taiwan. Attached to this post is an official letter, which I'll also have on my blog post for this episode. And it's from, of course, Senate President Jocon Baules and House Speaker Sabino Anastasio. And let me just forewarn you, this is some next level, oh my God, type content. So let me just go ahead and read it. This letter is addressed to the Honorable Faustina K. Reu'ermaruk, Minister of State, regarding comments made by Palau's ambassador to the Republic of China, Taiwan, and it's dated August 13, 2018. Dear Madam Minister, we wish to express our concern and disagreement with the public comments made by our ambassador to the Republic of China, Taiwan, Ambassador Dilmay Luisa Olgaril, on July 23, 2018. Ambassador Olgaril significantly misrepresented the Republic's position regarding Chinese tourism and our relationship with Taiwan. Palau consistently strives to promote tourism around the globe and welcomes all visitors to our island nation. The ambassador's comments reflect her personal viewpoint and are not representative of the inclusive tourism policy that our country encourages. Ambassador Olgaril is responsible for helping to facilitate diplomatic relations between Palau and the Republic of China, Taiwan. She's not in a position to unilaterally decide policy matters or to determine whether certain tourists will be excluded. Palau has signed an agreement to promote all tourism, including from the People's Republic of China. Furthermore, Palau is committed to maintaining positive and productive international relationships. It was incorrect for the ambassador to suggest that we have a preference for countries with the same system of government, such as Taiwan. Madam Minister, we respectfully request that the Ministry of State adopt a uniform policy on tourism and apply that same policy to all countries with which Palau has a relationship. The tourism industry is extremely important to Palau, and we wish to avoid any statements that might jeopardize our international relationships and economic stability. As Minister of State and the former Vice Chairperson of the Palau Visitors Authority, you are well-versed in our country's approach to tourism and the policies by which we abide. We therefore request that you advise Ambassador Olgaril to act in accordance with the prescribed approach and policies on tourism. Her public comments should be representative of our country's stated principles and values related to the tourism industry. If these requests cannot be accommodated, Tolbil Ragalula will be forced to take action in the fiscal year 2019 budget. We will decrease either the budget of the PVA or that of the Republic of Palau Embassy in Taipei, or both. We will not promote funding two entities with conflicting policies. As a nation, we must take a uniform stance. You have the requisite knowledge, understanding, and experience to facilitate and ensure such consistency. We therefore request that you direct your ambassador accordingly to promote a cohesive and economical tourism policy in Palau. Respectfully and sincerely, Sabino Anastasio, Speaker, House of Delegates, 10th Olvil Ragalulao, and Jocon Baules, President of the Senate, 10th Olvil Ragalulao. CC'd in this letter are President Tommy E. Remangasao Jr., Ms. Dilmay Luisa Olgaril, Ambassador to ROC Taiwan, Mr. Mirai Balast Metul, Chairman, Palau Visitors Authority, all delegates and all senators of the 10th OEK. So, one concerned citizen commented on the letter saying, I find the wording of the letter to be paradoxical. Now, maybe I'm just stating the obvious, but wouldn't reducing PVA and the ROC embassy's budget also risk jeopardizing international relationships and economic stability? Furthermore, indirectly stating a preference to which the letter is intended to address? Now, I don't know if you're familiar with the phrase cutting off your nose to spite your face. If not, it basically means harming yourself in the process of trying to harm others. Like you're trying to get back at someone, but it kind of comes back on you and fucks you up too. That's cutting off your nose to spite your face. And that's kind of what this letter amounts to. At the same time, this letter, and this is as far as I can gather, I will research this some more, but based on the information in front of me right now, this letter is also not representative of Palau's stated principles and values related to the tourism industry. Rather, it's a blatant use of position to threaten and intimidate others for personal gain. This was all really confusing to me until I remembered that this is the same senator who wanted to increase Palau's population by banning contraceptives and prophylactics without consulting with anyone from the medical field. So yeah, that's our update on Wyndham Palau and all that fun, exciting shit. Since we're discussing development projects in Imalig, now, for those who are unfamiliar with the process, anyone doing business in Belau who is not a Palauan citizen has to go through the FIB or Foreign Investment Board. That said, let me tell you about this interesting set of documents I stumbled across. Now, this is 3 pages long, and page one is a letter dated October 4th, 2017. It is addressed to the Foreign Investment Board chairperson, who would be Ms. Susan Nirausui, and it is signed by Kuyeb Lelai. And of course, while this set of documents will be available for you to view on marire.com, let me go ahead and read this letter to you. Dear Chairperson Nirausui, my name is Kuyeb Lelai. I am staying in Koror, but I'm from Ale'ui, Imalig State. I have several land property located in Ale'ui Hamlet. My Chinese investor friend's name is Mr. Chang King Wen, with passport number E5785697, issued by the People's in Republic of China. Mr. Wen is currently applying to build a resort hotel in Ale'ui. His application is going to be filed soon with the name as Palau China Resort. We are currently negotiating for the long-term lease agreements with them for the construction of the resort on our land. We are presently negotiating with the state of Imalig for a possible rock site to build and operate a quarry. These letter of intent is being sent to you so that you can proceed to consider their respective application while awaiting the lease agreement, which will be concluded as soon as possible. To this end, we are requesting that you consider their application, and we will be contacting you shortly to provide the required lease agreement. Your cooperation on my request is fully appreciated. Sincerely, Kuyeb Lelai Adra Ale'ui. Now, it is worth noting that Kuyeb Lelai is the wife of House Speaker Sabino Anastasio. Page 2 of this document will explain why this matters. It is a summary of Foreign Investment Approval Certificate application. Wow, that was a mouthful. Name of applicant, Palau China Resort Inc. PCRI. Hyphen High Quality Hotel. Application filing fee $2,500. Date first submitted 10/11/2017. FIAC application number 646-2017. FIAC application is new. Date of charter in Palau September 26, 2017. Applicant stated scope of business: to build, operate, and manage a high-quality hotel in Imalig State, proposed term 50 years. Form of business enterprise, Palau Corporation. Location of proposed project or business, Imalig State. Amount of investment, $5 million initial capital investment. Amount of paid-in capitalization, if corporation, none at this time. Shareholder's name, nationality, or summary if more than one. Wen Chang King, 700 shares, 70%. Liu Ji Hui, 100 shares, 10%. Li Yun, 100 shares, 10%. Wen Hao Kun, 100 shares, 10%. Local Agent for Service of Process in Palau, Mr. Sabino Anastasio. Care of P.O. Box 9048, Koror, Palau, 96940, telephone number 680-775-0393. Important notice, the entire application for an FIAC is important. Files may be reviewed at the FIB office in Mimes. The application is enclosed and should be reviewed in its entirety to be assured that all significant details are learned. The FIB provides this summary for convenience only, and it is not meant to be a substitute for a full review of the application or other parts of the file. Now, page 3, the last page, is also dated for sometime last year. It looks like September. I'd give you the exact date it was written. I mean, the date is right here in front of me. It's just, I'm not 100% certain what all the numbers are in here, aside from the, I think what says 09 and the 2017, but the actual date is kind of, looks like letters. But let me go ahead and read this to you too. Palau China Resort Inc. PCRI change of local agent due to the local agent requirement stated in the Foreign Investment Act RPPL 9-64. The local agent of Palau China Resort Incorporated, Ms. Linda Hui, has been changed to Mr. Sabino Anastasio, care of PO Box 9048, Koror, Palau 96940, telephone number 775-0393, signed by Yun Lee. Alright, so we've covered the South Pacific Mandate and the Second World War with stunning brevity, I might add. Now we're moving into the trust territory of the Pacific Islands, or as I like to think of it, how the United States colonized all of Micronesia despite United Nations Resolution 1514, but that comes later on, and this is a topic I'm going to linger on for a bit, so no worries, we will get to it. But first and foremost, we must go over what the Trust Territory even was. All right, now, the Trust Territory of the Pacific Islands, or TTPI, or as I keep hearing my parents' generation on up calling it, Temelatiti, was a United Nations strategic trusteeship that was administered by the United States. The trusteeship agreement was approved by the United States Security Council on April 2, 1947, and ratified by the United States in a joint congressional resolution on July 18th, 1947. Now that same day, President Harry S. Truman also approved the trusteeship agreement and made Admiral Louis E. Denfield the first High Commissioner of the TTPI, also known as the HICOM. Now, initially it was under Navy control, but the trust territories were transferred to the Department of the Interior in 1951. The administrative headquarters, originally here in Honolulu, moved to Guam and eventually made their way to Saipan. For administrative purposes, the trust territories were divided into the same six districts based on the earlier colonial precedent. So there was the Marshall Islands District, the Pohnpei District, the Chuuk District, the Marianas District, Yap, and the Palau District. And later on, they went ahead and included the Kosrae District. Now, on October 21st, 1986, the United States ended its administration of the Marshall Islands District. The termination of U.S. administration on Chuuk, Yap, Kosrae, Pohnpei, and the Marianas District soon followed on November 3, 1986. But the UN only formally ended trusteeship for Chuuk, Yap, Kosrae, Pohnpei, the Marianas, and the Marshalls on December 22, 1990. On May 25, 1994, the United Nations ended the trusteeship for us, the Palau District, after which Palau and the United States agreed to establish our Independence Day, which, as we all know, is October 1st, 1994. So that is a very concise, very fast overview of what the Trust Territory of the Pacific Islands was. Now, as I'll be discussing stuff that took place under the Temelatiti, Trust Territory Times. You'll find that I'll be bouncing around a lot from like one era to another. There is a method to my madness, so I ask that you just please do your best to follow. And again, all of the source material that I do use for these podcast episodes will be available through my website in the blog posts that go with the episodes. However, I am also available online by text. I want to think that I'm one of the easiest people to find and get a hold of, particularly online. So again, if you have questions, please feel free to contact me because I have no problems trying to kind of elaborate on things, or I'm always open to that because I want you guys to know these things, because it's that whole idea of how will we lead in the future if we don't know how to avoid the pitfalls of our past, especially when certain segments of our leadership fall under the category of ain't shit. It's important for us to know how we got to where we are so that we know how to kind of navigate ourselves out of it. Okay, the reason I told you that I'd be kind of skipping around is because there'll be a lot of documents that I actually want to cover. I'm going to dedicate entire segments and podcast episodes to certain documents. The biggest one, and I've mentioned it maybe before, is the Solomon Report. But before we get to that, I want to read you an excerpt from History of the U.S. Trust Territory of the Pacific Islands, specifically from a section titled Overview of U.S. Policy. And this is by Robert C. Keist, who was the director of the Pacific Islands Studies Program at the Center for Asian and Pacific Studies at the University of Hawaii at Manoa. Now, this is one of six papers from the 9th Annual Pacific Islands Studies Conference, which was held on April 19th, 1984. And I'm not going to say how old I was or even if I was alive at that time, because I feel like that would just give too much away about me. As always, you'll be able to read and often download the source materials I use for this podcast, because the more you know. I have recently written a couple of papers about American policy, or the lack thereof, in the United States Trust Territory of the Pacific Islands. I have argued that the United States has never had a consciously conceived or a coherent policy that has actually been implemented then actually followed in the islands. I have also attempted to counter the notion that there have been two policies, each with its own time frame. What are these two supposed policies? For the first period, it is sometimes claimed that the United States had and followed a policy that has been referred to as the ethnological zoo policy. The time frame was from immediately after the Second World War until the early 1960s, or one could say the zoo was maintained during the first one and one half decades of the American administration. It is claimed that the Americans wanted to keep the islands out of the mainstream of world events and wanted to protect and preserve Micronesian cultures. Now, it seems to me to be quite obvious that the United States has never been particularly concerned about the preservation of other societies. I feel reasonably certain that American Indian peoples know this. With regard to European immigrants within the United States, and since the last century, a melting pot philosophy has prevailed, and the attendant notion has been that everyone should become 100% American. With regard to peoples and cultures abroad, the general American lack of sensitivity to other societies was the concern of a popular book, The Ugly American, about a quarter of a century ago. The second period began during the JFK administration, about 1962 or 1963, and it continued until the late 1970s. It is argued that the zoo policy was cast aside and a new policy of entrapment was initiated. The notion is that the United States set out to entrap the peoples of Micronesia in a vast web of dependency in order to keep the islands firmly within the American sphere of influence. There are better reasons for arguing that there was indeed such a policy of entrapment rather than the zoo notion. In the early 1960s, the United States had fallen under severe criticism by the United Nations. The UN had sent a visiting mission to the Trust Territory, and the results were devastating from the American point of view. The destruction of war remained evident in many places. Almost nothing had been accomplished in the way of economic development. There had been little movement in the direction of self-determination. no attempt had been made to foster a pan-Micronesian identity. In general, things were judged to be in a deplorable condition, and it correctly appeared that the United States lacked any sense of real direction for the territory. President Kennedy was clearly embarrassed, and the situation was further complicated by other matters. In the post-war years, it was no longer respectable to have colonies, and Kennedy had gone on record that the U.S. opposed colonialism. The United Nations team essentially had said that the U.S. was maintaining a colony and doing a poor job of it at that. Further embarrassment occurred when a polio epidemic swept through the Marshall Islands, and out of neglect or lack of foresight, vaccine had not been made available in Micronesia. Kennedy wanted some positive action, and he appointed a study commission to be headed by Dr. Anthony Solomon, a Harvard economist. Solomon was instructed to make an investigative tour of the territory and come back with a set of recommendations. Solomon went out to the territory in the early part of 1963, and it was assumed from the outset that it was absolutely necessary for the islands to remain in the United States camp. Upon completion of his study, Solomon believed that if the United States initiated greatly improved education and health systems, launched an ambitious scheme of capital improvement projects, and stimulated economic development with a substantial emphasis on agriculture, then the Micronesians would easily be persuaded to elect to remain under the protective wing of their benefactor. He urged that all of this be accomplished quickly and that a plebiscite be held early. Indeed, he believed that it could all be settled within 5 years. With the wisdom of hindsight, Solomon's optimism seems quite naive today. So from the onset of the Trust Territory status, the Micronesian region as a whole was kinda in trouble. I mean, whether people were being kept in an ethnological zoo or being subtly coerced into siding with our colonizers like drug addicts in the making, it's pretty clear that we were destined to go through some shit. So again, I'm going to make this paper and the other five published with it available on meridide.com, along with documents pertaining to the Micronesian Constitutional Convention and maybe even a few other goodies. And next week, I'll be playing some clips from an interview with longtime anti-nuclear activist Kadasau Bena Sakuma, and we will finally be getting to the Solomon Report, so make sure you tune in because, oh my god, the Solomon Report. If you haven't read it, you're going to read it. If you don't want to read it, you're going to have to put up with listening to me read from it. Let me just say, this document is a blueprint on paper, text, words, evidence of how to further colonize us. I have a cousin who, in reading the first page, was already pissed. Like, that's how infuriating the Solomon Report is. In fact, because we will be discussing the Solomon Report next week, I will make it available on the website with this episode so that you can read ahead. And if you have comments, concerns, questions, if you have something you want to say, if you need to vent about the shit you're about to read, you're more than welcome to do it. I know we don't really need scientific studies to tell us that bad news or tragic news can be unhealthy, but there's a study with data that says it. So to reiterate, bad news can fuck a person up. Now, a British psychologist, Dr. Graham Davey, who specializes in the psychological effects of media violence, stated in an interview that violent media exposure can exacerbate or contribute to the development of stress, anxiety, depression, and even post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD. Davey says negative news can significantly change an individual's mood. God knows it changed mine today. It can also affect your own personal worries, and viewing negative news means that you're more likely to see your own personal worries as more threatening and severe, and you're more likely to find your worry difficult to control and more distressing than it would normally be. So, this is especially important because of two things. Now, A study of national trends in depression amongst adolescents and young adults, published in the journal Pediatrics in November last year, found that the prevalence of teens who reported a major depressive episode in the previous 12 months jumped from 8.7% in 2005 to 11.5% in 2014. And just to clarify, a major depressive episode is defined as a period of at least 2 weeks of low mood that is present in most situations. So symptoms include low self-esteem, loss of interest in normally enjoyable activities, problems with sleep, energy, concentration. The other reason this is important, and I'm bringing it up, is that more than 75% of all mental health conditions begin before the age of 24, according to the National Alliance on Mental Illness, which is why adolescence, high school, college is such a critical time. And college counselors are actually seeing a record number of students who are dealing with a variety of mental health problems, from depression and anxiety to more serious psychiatric disorders. What has increased over the past 5 years is threat to self-characteristics, including serious suicidal thoughts and self-injurious behaviors, according to Ashley Stauffer, who's the project manager for the Center of Collegiate Mental Health at Penn State University. Now, according to its data, collected from 139 institutions, 26% of students who sought help said that they had intentionally hurt themselves. 33.2% had considered suicide, and those are numbers significantly higher than the previous year. And then, according to a 2016 UCLA Higher Education Research Institute survey of freshmen, nearly 12% say they are frequently depressed. It is important to note, however, that exposure to negative news is unlikely to cause depression, anxiety, or PTSD in individuals who aren't already prone to these conditions. But it can lead to pessimism and a sense of world weariness that does lead us to perceive the state of the world in an overly negative light, which could cause a person to ignore and can overshadow the things that are good and the things that are working. And I'm bringing all of this up because honestly, I am an absolute asshat for not mentioning this very specific US-based mental health crisis resource, which is the crisis text line. Now, be sure to check the blog post for this episode for more information about the crisis text line and the work they do, because it's absolutely amazing.
That's the sound of someone in crisis sending a text message that could read,
"I'm afraid to go to class because I'll be bullied."
Or,
"I don't want to cut myself. Can you help?"
The overall suicide rate is going up and it's quite problematic and troubling.
This is your average person who is in that hot moment of crisis, whether it be a panic attack, suicidal ideation. They need someone there with them in that moment.
We thought when we started Crisis Text Line that bullying was going to be one of the primary issues. Instead, what we're seeing is the top issues are depression, suicidal thoughts, self-harm.
Within 5 minutes, a trained counselor will respond.
"Hi, my name is Sarah. It sounds like you have a lot on your mind today. Do you want to tell me a little bit more about what's going on?"
So in a sense, it might be even better and more effective that way.
Exactly.
You cut to the chase, so to speak.
Exactly. So you can text us anytime. We are national within the United States. And you text us at 741-741. It's right up the left side of your keypad.
Crisis Text Line is the brainchild of entrepreneur Nancy Lublin.
So in a way, you're growing faster than Facebook.
We spread geographically faster than they did when they first launched. We launched quietly in Chicago and El Paso. And in 4 months, we were in every area code in the United States.
The idea here is to give young people a tool that they might be comfortable with, particularly in crisis. You don't have to speak up, you can text.
Text message is the way of the future. It's the medium that people know and trust, especially younger people.
Technology has changed our world. It's changed the way we communicate, and the mental health community is adapting.
While the sessions are anonymous, its technology can track trends, data it's now making available to nonprofits and researchers.
And our crisis counselor's goal is to empower you. We are going to help you find that cool calm and then safety plan. So we are actually ensuring that the person has the tools they need to help themselves going forward.
they've teamed up with a national crisis text hotline and put up these signs all across the bridge, hoping that young people will text for help first.
Crisis Text Line, or CTL, is the first national 24/7 intervention hotline exclusively by text messaging. It offers anonymity, and it's as easy as 741741.
I'm glad that you texted in. Remember that we're here 24/7 if you're in crisis.
There's this quote from a writer, Aisha Mirza, and it was one of those things where like I read it and I just was like, wow, I felt that type of quotes. And it's that it's not the bruises on the body that hurt, it is the wounds of the heart and the scars on the mind. In coming weeks, hopefully after we've discussed politics ad nauseum, I will be able to post my personal segments, Native Expat Revisited, where I'll be talking more about resources for people dealing with mental health issues, or have family or friends dealing with mental health issues, or want to learn more about the ways they can help others struggling with mental health issues. Until then, this has been a long day, and this has been my mental health check-in. Don't forget to check in on yourselves and each other and that one friend who always has their shit together, because more than likely, they really need it. Apologies to everyone who waited for my Friday posting, only to find that I didn't post a damn thing until this, our regular podcast posting day. Between life happening and my tremendous underestimation of the speed with which asinine news can come from home, I literally could not. That said, I am trying to get caught up with all the news, and I'm hoping to get a bonus episode to you out this week, because there's literally so much shit that I still need to cover with you guys. Thanks again for tuning into this episode 15 of the Shenanigans podcast. Palau's answer to Rachel Maddow, or Ral Amado, or Branch Window. And I swear I really had a more clever Rachel Maddow reference, but the combination of the studio's temperature and the current state of our legislative leadership has literally fried my brain. So I'm off to go do some serious nanigan-ing, ideally in our swimming pool. Thank you again for tuning in, and remember, please don't drink and drive, don't drink and dial, don't drink and text, don't drink and tweet, don't drink and do anything you'll regret come morning, because come morning you will regret it.